If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Heard your little Greek story that you
I knew I would have that in there because I thought
my
that would get
perked
your
up.
I would thought that would get your attention. Yes, a Greek Independence Day parade, 2:30 this afternoon, Van Buren and Halsted.
It's a big deal.
Going there?
I'm not going to be able to. For years, I've been trying to get on the flaming cheese float.
But so you can yell, "Whoop-a!"
I have not. Apparently, the fire marshals have objected to such a thing. It's too bad. So what did I do when I came to visit you in the newsroom this morning?
You are establishing a tradition here at WGN Radio.
On the Sunday show.
I had no idea. When you walked in, you said, "I have waited most of the week to do this, to show," and I'm thinking, what in the world is he talking about?
Now what's he going to do?
So out comes from your pocket a yet-to-be-used I Voted sticker.
Right.
And it is proudly displayed.
I slapped it on my chest.
On your shirt today.
The way you always wear your I Voted sticker.
From the 1950s.
From the Nixon, Kennedy. Kennedy election.
It was the Goldwater Johnson election.
Okay. All right.
1964.
I wanted to be like you. I wanted to be where my...
Boy, that's the first time I've ever heard that.
I want to be like Schwani.
Well, it looks wonderful, and I'm glad you did your civic duty.
That's right.
Good for you.
I have no idea who I voted for. But
you made my day. Thank you.
That's right. I'm going to take it off in no time.
No, don't do that.
Well, everybody's. I've noticed when I walked from the newsroom back here to my palatial studio, I noticed like everybody's eyes are darting down that I'm wearing. Like, what kind of dork is wearing? It's like that's
now,
what I get
so,
for trying
so
to be
what,
like Shawnee.
What you're saying is when you go
are
to
a dork. What?
Did you hear that, Andy?
I didn't hear anything.
When you go to WGN TV.
Oh, yeah.
You should wear this tomorrow, the next day, and the day after.
Yeah, it'll be long gone by then.
Okay. What did you call me?
I'd be surprised if it makes 9:15 to tell you the
truth. It's good enough for me.
It's the great Peggy Lee. And her song, Mañana.
That is a young Peggy Lee there.
That's a young Peggy Lee. I'll tell you exactly when this was on the charts. Actually, it was the number one song on this day in 1948.
Wow. Like I said, a young Peggy Lee. That was way before Fever.
77 years ago today.
Wow. How
about this song, though? We can get a nice morning show conga line going here. Come on, here we go. Wherever you are this morning, start your own conga line. Don't you want to know why I'm playing this?
You said it was the number one song.
Yeah, but it's a significant thing, though. This day in 1948, when WGN Television signed on for the very first time.
Oh, nice. Yes.
Actually, it was April 5th. It was yesterday, but I wasn't here yesterday, so...
You were voting.
I was busy.
Not early voting, late voting.
I was busy driving around being mad. You know what my pet peeve is about elections? This is a complete side note. When they leave their campaign posters all over the place, they don't clean up after themselves.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm talking about? After the election, they post their signs everywhere. Then the election's over, and their signs are still out there. In some cases, for years. Should be against the law. If you leave your campaign posters out there, you should be fined for everyone that's still out there. You're littering, basically.
So you were driving around being mad.
I was writing down locations.
And candidates.
And nasty letters to the candidates. Yeah, anywho. It's WGN's 88th anniversary.
Wow. About happy anniversary.
88th?
88 years old. Signed on April. Here, I have the history right here.
Wait a second.
80th, maybe.
No, wait a minute. I'm sorry, 77.
70, yeah, right.
77.
That sounds better.
I don't know where I got 88.
That sounds better. Now, I believe the very first voice was that of Jack Brickhouse.
Well, Mr. Jack Brickhouse, the 1948 Golden Gloves Boxing Finals. That actually was a month before. They had not formally signed on the air yet. They were doing test broadcasts on which Jack Brickhouse did the 1948 Golden Globe Boxing Finals from the old Chicago Stadium. But it was April 5th, 1948, 7:45 p.m., that we went on the air officially with a two-hour-long special, WGN-TV Salutes Chicago, featuring then-Chicago Mayor Martin Kennelly, U.S. Senator Charles Brooks, Governor Dwight Greene, of course, Robert R. McCormick, founder of Chicago Tribune, WGN Radio, WGN TV, world's greatest newspaper, and musician Two Tun Baker. Remember Two Tun Baker?
The name, pretty much, yeah. But Two Tun Baker,
he was a big deal. He had a children's show on WGN back then. I remember him best. He did commercials for Riverview Park, and he was a rather rotund man.
Was he the guy that did all those Riverview commercials?
He did the Riverview commercials. You'd see him as if he were on the roller coaster.
Yes.
Coming down the hill, but they had to push him up the hill and then start the cameras and then drop it. So it looked like he just came back from a roller coaster ride. I don't know if that was because of his weight. He was a very large man.
Did you ever make it to Riverview?
Thus the name Two Tun.
Two Tun Baker, yeah.
That's a nice thing to call somebody, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, usually it's ironic. I mean, the guys should be really skinny when you call them two-ton.
You call them two-ton, yeah. Right. And not even one ton.
Yeah.
2,000 pounds was not enough.
Yeah. It had to be four.
You know who else was on that first broadcast? Comedian George Gobel.
On the first one?
On the very first one.
From the Hollywood
Lonesome
Squares.
Lonesome George.
Yeah, Lonesome George from the Hollywood Squares. And band leader Robert Trendler and the WGN Orchestra, as in Bob Trendler.
And his Big Top Band,
from
yes.
The Bozo Show.
Mm-hmm.
Very first broadcast.
Yeah, I remember years and years ago, they were rerunning some older radio programs around Christmas. And, you know, someone like Carl Grayson or one of the other announcers from back in the day was mentioning that the musical director was Robert Trendler.
Robert Trendler.
Yeah,
he's one of the originals.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, there were only 1,700 operational television sets in Chicago.
Wow. 1948? Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
1948.
You know, if you look at the numbers here and around the country, it's still staggering to look at, you know, the numbers from 1948, and then just several years later, they triple, quadruple.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Course. Everybody had to have a TV.
Of course.
I feel like I have 1,700 in my own home right now.
Right? Most people have them in just about every room, right?
Yep. And now if you have a tablet, you've got a portable TV.
Yeah. You don't want to miss a second. People are texting in remembering Two Tun Baker, that Two Tun Baker, he was a piano player, he was a musician. Yeah, let me see if I can find, let's see if there's any Two Tun Baker on the old.
Trying to get some Two Tun Baker tunes there, are you?
Wait a second, I think I found a good one.
Okay.
I think I found a good one. I have to skip past the commercial on YouTube first.
At least you admit
normally,
it.
On this show, I love commercials. Everywhere else, yeah. I hate them.
No, can't have them.
Says Mr. Two Tun Baker and his musical hit makers. I'm a lonely little petunia.
of all the safflower told. Oh, I'm a lonely widow, petunia in an onion patch.
An onion patch.
I'm a lonely widow, petunia in an onion patch. And all I do is cry all day.
Well, you can see why they would want him on the very first program.
The air's so strong it takes my breath.
Get me that 2-ton Baker for our first broadcast.
Does producer Jack have this record?
Oh, please.
Is he still awake in the control room?
He tunes out right when the opening theme comes on. The Sunday morning theme comes on. Jack's eyes go into the back of his head. But this is the 2-ton Baker. And as I say, you know, I have no recollection of this, but I definitely remember him on the old Riverview commercials. Come and laugh your troubles away.
Yeah. Yep.
At Riverview Park. And, you know, he was there. He was a big deal in Chicago in more ways than one.
Those commercials motivated me to beg and plead my parents to take me to Riverview. And as it worked out, we ended up going there the year before they closed.
Oh, see.
So we drove all the way into Chicago and up to the north side there to go to Riverview.
Well, like you, you know, we lived on the south side then. Southeast side. We would take the bus, CTA, 79th Street bus, all the way down to Western Avenue. And then Western and Belmont. And I don't know how... It seemed like it took 10 hours.
Well, it probably did.
But, you know, and as always, you know, we were the four brothers, of course.
They left you.
Yeah, they didn't ditch me on this one.
Oh, they didn't?
Like they did.
I thought they just leave you at the entrance there and said, he's too young to get in.
Yeah, they took pity on me and actually protected me. Yeah, we would go up there and just have the time till we couldn't walk anymore, and then get back on that stupid bus
for another 10-hour ride home.
And for another 10-hour ride home, right? I mean, what would it take to drive? Half an hour, 40 minutes?
Maybe? 40 minutes, more like, so, depending on the traffic.
So you can imagine what it must have been like on a bus, starting and stopping and starting and stopping. And if I remember correctly, 79th and Western was a bus terminal where you had to switch buses. So, I mean, I think that may have also been part of the delay. I don't know.
For the Western bus as you got dropped off from the 79th bus.
Yeah. What was your favorite ride at Riverview? Andy, do you even, you're not old enough to
remember. No, it was gone before I was, but my parents
closed
went there a lot.
In 67.
Yeah, we were there in 66. It closed the year after we were there.
My dad talks about the Bobs all the time.
Yep.
It's the most famous roller coaster there.
Yep. The Bobs.
Mm-hmm. They had one of the most impressive carousels ever, which I believe is still in operation at one of the Six Flags parks.
Hmm.
I believe they bought the Riverview Carousel because it was so beautiful. If it's still up, years ago, I know somebody bought it years ago. I don't know if it's still operational or not. I used to love those water bugs. Remember those? Where you get in, it's like a motorized inner tube, and you know, it's like bumper cars in the water.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And you could squirt other people.
Nice.
They had like some kind of water pump or something. You get four brothers in there who are able to squirt each other. One thing's going to happen. I'm going to get soaked.
You're going to get soaked.
Yes.
Hope you brought a change of clothes.
Right. I used to love the, what was it called? It was the boat ride that went up into the air and then it shot you down into a pool of water. Was it the chute?
Something like that. Yeah. There was also quite a fun house in there where you had the weird mirrors, you know.
Yeah, Aladdin's Castle.
Aladdin's Castle, and you were upside down and crawling through spaces and trying to get through a moving hallway of some sort, a corridor.
Yeah.
I just have a hard time driving by that intersection thinking and picturing an amusement park at that corner.
Yeah, it would be hard to do these days.
Yeah. Where the police communication tower is there now at Belmont Western is where they had a ride. I don't remember the exact name. Maybe it was called the parachute ride. But you would sit in, remember when you go to the park and play on the swings and they had just like a canvas thing that you would sit in, a canvas, you know, and chains?
Yeah.
That's what this was, except it took you way up in the air and then dropped you.
Right.
And a parachute would open.
Right.
Hopefully.
Yes.
And, you know, you would, you know, you'd wait in line forever. But where you see that police communication tower now, that's where the parachute drop was.
Huh. Now, Riverview opened up actually in the 1890s. Did it go back that far?
It opened, late
19th century?
I think you're right. It opened up as a German picnic area.
Yeah.
It didn't really open up as an amusement park per se. You'd go there and put your blankets out and have a picnic, have a knotwurst.
Knockwurst.
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 Yes.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, so there you go.
And then it expanded into the amusement park. Ravinia was amusement park early on.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, and then it expanded. You know, by the 1930s, it was pretty much all music up there.
Hmm. Yeah. Maybe that's why they call it the Ravinia Festival.
That is why they call it the festival.
Listen to us. Listen to us waxing nostalgic.
Jack, are you still with us?
Yeah, we weren't.
He left the room.
We won't be hearing from Jack until 12:59 p.m. today. 1 minute before it's time to go. What do we? Oh, you know what we have on the show today? I found a recording yesterday. I was, you know, preparing my cooking segment for television this week. What am I going to cook? I'm going through, you know, what's appropriate. Easter's in a couple of weeks. What would be appropriate? My mom's egg salad.
There you go.
My mom's
deviled eggs.
My mom's deviled eggs, which I don't know. You know, everyone thinks their moms are the best. I think my mom's deviled
eggs are the best.
Are the best. And I had her on the radio show once. In fact, it was 10 years ago. To give us the recipe for her deviled eggs, and I'm going to play that recording today.
Oh, excellent. Cool. That's great.
I haven't played any recordings of my mom since she passed away because it was a little fresh, you know, still.
Sure.
A little difficult to hear her voice. When I did listen to the interview, it was a little emotional, but I think I'm ready to take that giant step. So later on.
That'll be great.
My mom's actual words and her deviled egg recipe. Take that, B96.
I'm a whistle teapot, short and stout. Here is my handle, here is my spout.
Found this one from Two Ton Baker also.
And I shout, just tip. Me over and pour me out.
I think I may have found a new far-flung forecast theme. Who wouldn't want to hear that every single week?
I haven't heard these songs in ages.
Right? Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, moms and dads, kids of all ages, it's time once again for America's favorite, the far-flung forecast. Heard every week at this time and presented by, I don't know, maybe what, a quarter ton? Not a quarter ton, but far less. The very slim Dave Schwann.
Okay, before we do anything else,
yes,
I must let our listeners know that you have officially removed the I voted sticker.
I told you I was taking it off.
And you weren't kidding. You, yeah. So it's now removed then.
It was heavy. I had to take it off. It's distracting me.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make mention of that then.
Okay.
So, but thank you for bringing that in and thinking of me. I can just see you at the polling place
it
going.
Was a good joke.
I'm going to bring this in and show Schwani on Sunday.
It's a good joke for a minute. I don't have to wear it for 12 months like you do.
12 years.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for that fine introduction, Mr. Baker and Mr. Richards. Today, our far-flung forecast, if you will be so kind as to get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices, we go up to Mandan, North Dakota. Mandan, North Dakota is on
Mandan, North Dakota. Once again, making up names of places.
Just for purposes of this segment.
Mandan.
Mandan, North Dakota, founded in 1879, and no, I'm not making it up. Population is 24,000. It is the eighth most populous city in North Dakota. And you might say it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere, because that is a vast, vast region out there. But near Mandan and near the adjacent town of Washburn, North Dakota, is where the Corps of Discovery, led by Lewis and Clark, camped out for the winter of 2004 and 2005. And it was 220 years ago tomorrow that they left the fort there to head further west, and it would not be for another year and a half before they finally made it back to St. Louis, where they began. But there is a wonderful replica of the Lewis and Clark Mandan Fort there outside Mandan, an interpretive center that they call it. They've rebuilt it, which is pretty much where they think the original fort was. And I'm going to, we'll post pictures on the website because Dad and I were there in 2019.
Okay.
And it's a fascinating place to be.
Were you pretending to be either Lewis
or Clark? No, I wasn't. You mean with like big hunting gear on and a fur hat and all of that? No.
Hey, Clark, come over here. Look at this. I think I see some golden arches.
But Mandan, North Dakota, and Washburn, North Dakota, mostly cloudy, and they're actually a little warmer than we are here. It's 40 degrees there. But we will post some pictures from Mandan, North Dakota.
Very good. And everybody try to work the phrase Mandan into your conversation.
It's so one word, Mandan.
Into conversation today. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. That's it.
That's it.
Thinking about selling your home but dreading what hidden fees and repairs might cost you? Hi, I'm Tom Detlich with Grammy Homes, and we're here to put your mind at ease. Our process is simple. You'll get our upfront, honest offer in hours. And the amount we offer is the amount you get, period. Grandview will buy your home as is. You don't need to fix a thing. And we even take care of any items you leave behind. When you sell to us, we can close in as little as 10 days. Get your no-obligation offer at GrandviewHomes.com today.
You know what I like about Lakeside Bank, Phil?
Well, there's
Lakeside people comprehend and appreciate what I need. They're perceptive. They move with alacrity, velocity, and dispatch. They're limber, fluid, and adaptable. They have grit and zeal. They persevere.
Ah, in other words, they understand you, are flexible, work fast, and get things done.
Precisely.
Anything you missed?
They're affable, amiable, congenial, and simpatico.
Ah, likable.
Precisely.
The two best words in banking, Lakeside Bank. It's about time. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
I basically had a perpetual sinus infection where it was, they would clear, get the meds.
And it didn't do anything.
Medications may not really help. They can be a temporary fix instead of trying to find the real root of a breathing triangle problem. And that's Mom chiming in. And what you're about to hear next was a first for Advent.
So my symptoms were the same. We actually had the same procedure on the same day. It was just a matter of, let's just do this. You know, why put it off?
An in-office procedure at Advent to get you breathing well is very convenient, and you shouldn't put it off, because breathing well changes lives.
I do remember the first deep breath.
Oh, I remember that.
The feeling of like, whoa, this is great.
Since then, breathing has gotten easier. Sleeping has gotten easier.
I came in over 10 years ago and I couldn't breathe ever, and now I can breathe. That's the best way I can put it.
Results may vary. Most insurance accepted.
Lyric Opera invites you to The Listeners. This operatic thriller was called the unmissable opera of the season by the New York Times and explores the search for belonging in a world of uncertainty. March 30th through April 11th. Tickets at lyricopera.org.
Today, the Blackhawks are back at the United Center as the Pittsburgh Penguins come to town. Pre-game 4:30 with Charlie Remeliotis. Face-off with John and Troy at 5 on the home of the Hawks, 720 WGN.
What a boom, what a bang!
With the Go Blackhawks!
Dean Richards, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Rest your bones with me. Driving slow on Sunday morning. And I never want to leave.
Already, it's Dean Richards Sunday morning. And time for the Weekend Health. Our pal, Dr. Jeremy Silver, joins us. Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Dr. Silva, good morning, my friend.
Morning, Dean. Good to speak to you.
Always nice to have you with us. I want to start off again. I know, you know, some people, you know, may be tired of hearing us talking about the measles outbreak, but it continues to grow and be more serious. Where are we with this this week?
Nowhere good, unfortunately. So the cases in Texas by number have increased beyond 480 and continue to rise. Nationwide, cases have gone beyond 600 with infections confirmed in 21 out of the 50 states. Not yet in Illinois, I should mention, but still kind of still in outbreak status for sure.
Yeah, that's encouraging at least that, that's how these things spread though. Did I read someplace that the measles outbreak already for 2025 equals the entire outbreak of measles for the year 2024?
Yeah, there's actually double the number of measles cases so far in the first quarter of this year than all of last year. So breaking the kind of records we don't want to be breaking.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of precautions should people anywhere, but, you know, we're talking about city of Chicago, state of Illinois, what kinds of precautions should we all be taking here to keep that measles outbreak away from us?
Well, you know, it's very difficult to deal with these kind of outbreaks with anything other than mass vaccination. That is truly the way out. But in terms of staying safe, you know, if you're traveling to an area that you know has infections, the best thing you can do is just wear one of those little droplet masks you can get at the pharmacy. And of course, wash your hands. And if you're particularly if you're older or immunocompromised or have chronic disease like chronic kidney disease or heart disease or lung disease, wearing a mask out in public is really the safest bet for all these type of respiratory viruses, whether it's measles or COVID or flu or what have you.
The number one thing that people talk to me about regarding measles that they email or text in about is I had a measles vaccine when I was a kid, so I think I'm covered. True or false?
It may be true. And covered is a relative term because the one dose of the vaccine gets you into the mid-90s in terms of percent protected. Two doses get you to close to 100% protected. So it depends on how many doses you had. It also depends, on when you had the dose. Certain people that were vaccinated in the 1950s and 60s may benefit from getting a booster. And then there have been folks, even people that I personally know, who for one reason or another only had one dose of the measles vaccine. And so, you know, in this day and age, I think it's reasonable to look for that booster update. And that's definitely a conversation to have with your primary care doctor.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Know that it's out there. Know that it's not slowing down. And, know that we're getting into a time of year with Easter and Passover just a couple of weeks away. Families are going to be getting together. There's going to be a lot of hugging and kissing and close contact with others, with the elderly. So, you know, take all the smart precautions.
100%.
If you are so inclined, I hope you are. I read an article this week, I believe it was in the Good Old Tribune, about the tiniest pacemaker that we have ever seen before. I seem to remember seeing a pacemaker once, on a talk show or something, not in somebody's chest. But it looked like maybe the size of a pack of cigarettes or something. It was already fairly small, but I guess this new one now is, the way it was described seemed like it was like a piece of rice. What do you know anything about this?
It is absolutely unbelievable and a nice piece of news to contrast with some of the other stuff that we've been talking about. This is something that was developed at Northwestern. It is, in fact, the size of a grain of rice. And the way that it works is it's implanted surgically, and then it is activated by a light signal from a device that sits outside of the body that's a little bit larger. And so if the device outside of the body senses that the heart is not beating appropriately, it sends a light signal to the heart that then basically activates this grain of rice, is essentially little pieces of metal when they're in the body fluid, they act as a battery and can send tiny signals to the heart to pace it. And it was actually designed, from what I understand, for pediatric heart patients. Mm. The tiniest patients of all, tiny little babies, who sometimes need help with electrical stimulation in those early days.
Yeah.
And then it eventually absorbs into the body, and it's totally safe and made of materials that the body can just absorb and get rid of.
Really?
It's total science fiction, Dean. It's really amazing.
I didn't know about the disintegration part of the story, that it dissolves like so many different substances, which are now used, stitches and all kinds of things that had to be physically removed before. Now it just goes away like that. Hey, can you explain the function of the pacemaker? What would require someone to have one?
Sure. So a pacemaker basically sends electrical stimuli to the muscle of the heart to get it to pace, to squeeze. The heart, naturally, when you're born, if you have a normal functioning heart tissue, you have cells that are just from birth automatically sending signals for the heart to beat. It's just one of the miracles of life. And in some cases, those signals are either not sent appropriately, or there's problems with the electrical wiring, if you will. And so the pacemaker is classically a device that is inserted into the chest. It's wires connected to a box, as you mentioned, the size of a pack of cigarettes, that send electrical signals directly into the heart muscle and tell it to squeeze. And so that's classically how a pacemaker works.
Yeah, this is a major development because it was fairly intrusive. I mean, not it wasn't open heart surgery, but it was fairly intrusive surgery, wasn't it? To previously place a pacemaker inside of a patient's body.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, it can be dangerous because when the wires, if they ever need to be removed, you know, they kind of the body creates this fibrosis or scarring pattern around the wires. Actually, I believe that's how Neil Armstrong died, that he had some heart surgery, had a pacemaker, the wires were removed, and that was the end. Mm. So certainly not without some risk, although they've improved this over time, and it's much, much safer nowadays. I wouldn't want to scare anybody that has a pacemaker in place, but certainly this is a quantum leap in biotechnology and medicine, and it's just really exciting and neat to read about.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. If you've got a question for Dr. Silver, question or a comment, you can call in. You can text in 312-981-7200 from the text line and the 630 area code. Does the shingles vaccine protect us from the measles?
Shingles. So shingles is a the vaccine for shingles. I'm not sure if it has any benefit for measles. I'll be 100% honest with that. But interestingly, there's been some news this week. They did a study in England, in Wales, with a lot of people. There were almost 300,000 folks in this study. And they looked at people that had received the vaccine versus those that didn't. This is the shingles vaccine. And those that received it were less likely to develop dementia in the ensuing period. And we're talking 20% less likely. Hmm. So a very interesting and significant benefit from that vaccine. As far as measles goes, I'm not aware of any kind of cross-benefit with that.
Yeah. Here's the 847 area code. I was born in 1958. I've never had the measles. Would I have ever been vaccinated?
You may have been. You may have been. I think this is the kind of case where you go to your primary care doctor, and they can do something where they can draw a thing called a titer. A titer is just a medical term for a level of an antibody. So they could actually look in your blood and see what your antibody level is. And if you've never been infected, but you did have the vaccine, you should have some sort of level. And then they can guide you based on what those levels are of whether you need to do anything or not.
Here is the 815 area code. Is there a new COVID booster on the horizon?
Great question. I'm not aware of any booster that's in production at the moment. But I'll do some research over the next week, Dean, and the next time we meet, I can try and update your listeners on that. But I'm not currently aware of a booster, no.
Let's go to the phone line, 312-981-7200. Evola, is that your name, Evola?
Yes, that's my last name.
First name's
Marcia.
Oh, Marcia, okay. You are on WGN.
Okay. Would a pacemaker help people who have arterial fibrillation as a last resort?
Good question. Yes, good question. I can tell you, without getting into the specifics about any one patient, in some cases, I think you're referring to atrial fibrillation, if I've heard you correctly.
That's it. Maybe I said it wrong.
Yeah. Before you explain, what is atrial fibrillation?
Yes, so atrial fibrillation is an abnormal beating of the heart. It's rather than a regular steady beat, it's a completely haphazard beat that it arises in the top part of the heart and can lead to problems over time. And so we like people to not have that problem. In some cases where it can be so challenging to treat, sometimes they'll just ablate the area, meaning they'll use electrocautery to that area and get rid of the beat altogether, in which case a pacemaker can sort of replace that original pacemaker that wasn't functioning normally, if that makes sense.
Okay. 'Cause I have a brother who has that issue and has had several those ablations to fix that, and it hasn't worked. And he's had all kinds of medication. This has been going on for years. So now they were talking arterial fibrillation. So I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on that.
First of all, I feel for your brother. You know, in the emergency department, we take care of patients who suffer from chronic atrial fibrillation every single day. And we do meet folks who have gone through ablations and still have the problem. It's very frustrating. So I wish him well, and I hope they're successful with the next step.
And Marcia, thank you very much for your call. Let's go over to Joanne. You're on WGN.
Hi, good morning. I'm 64. I had the shingles when I was in my 40s. And I've never had the shingles shot. Should I get it?
Yeah, is she naturally immune now since she's had it?
Yeah, so the recommendation is even if you've had it, still get the vaccine. It can still provide benefit from getting reinfected. So the recommendation would be, yes, go for it. It can still protect you.
And it's one shot, right?
Actually, a two-dose series. They space it out, I believe, a couple of months apart. So you get a dose, and then you go back again a couple of months later and get the second dose.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Worth it, though. I mean, since you've been through it, the way everyone has ever described shingles to me, it's very painful, right?
Yeah. I had it on my back, and it fouled a nerve all the way down my left leg to in front of my knee. Crazy.
Yeah, that's not good. Well, good luck. Sounds like you sure are a candidate for that. Dr. Silver, the shingles, I mean, it's a virus that lies dormant in most of us?
Yes, it's the herpes zoster virus, and like you said, you get infected once, and then what it does is it kind of travels along the sensory nerve roots right to the edge of the spinal cord and just kind of sits there. And it can, like you say, it can be dormant or latent for years or decades. And then when your immune system is distracted, either by a stress event, if you had a traumatic injury or you become sick, or you're even just emotionally stressed, and then it comes out and reinfects, and it can be extremely painful.
Everybody, you've got some homework to do this week or conversations to have with your doctors. One quick text from the 407, is the flu season winding down? I believe the answer to that is absolutely it is, right?
Yeah, it's definitely waning, and I think we're all relieved, not just flu, but COVID and the norovirus, all those horrible viruses we were seeing in January and February are finally fading a little bit. So very thankful for that reprieve.
Good deal. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Hope you have a great Sunday, Doc. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dean. Thanks for having me.
A fine report, Swanee. A fine report.
Thank you.
I hung on your every word.
As you always do.
I heard your Greek parade story again.
I saw you, your head tilted back and just kind of relaxing and enjoying every
second. Well, now I think you're just condescending with the story.
I wish you'd put back the I voted sticker on, but apparently that's not going to happen.
Are we going to beat that into the ground now?
Yes. Yes.
I saved my I voted sticker from last Tuesday. I wore it as a joke because you always do wear your I voted sticker. And
long after the election.
Yeah, months and years
and decades.
So I put mine on today to make a joke. Well, really, to make fun of you.
So what else is new?
And we got the big laugh from everybody in the newsroom this morning. Then I took it off. Not trying to milk a joke.
So I take it you will not be wearing it.
No, it's in the garbage. I threw it away.
You threw it away.
What am I supposed to do with it?
You don't collect them?
And that will give you an idea of what the inside of Swanee's apartment must look like. So I mentioned at the beginning of the show today, a full hour ago, that yesterday was the 77th anniversary of when WGN-TV first took the air. First time ever on the air for WGN-TV. That was right out of Tribune Tower, by the way. Remember? When the station first went on, this was before our time, but when the TV station first went on the air, It was over there where the mattress store is.
But the entrance was at the north end of the building, I believe.
Yeah, it was a different entrance, but it was downtown here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And we mentioned, the first broadcast was something called WGN-TV Salute to Chicago, April 5th, 1948, with all kinds of notables who were part of that broadcast. Would you like to hear part of that broadcast?
Oh, yeah.
Why, sure.
The very first time that WGN ever went on the air, this is what it sounded like.
Forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center, increasing clouds today. High only around 5. Maybe some rain this afternoon as well. Rain and maybe showers overnight tonight. A low in the 30s. Cloudy, windy, cold for the season tomorrow, with a chance of rain and in the morning, and a high around 44. 46 now at O'Hare. I'm Dave Schwann, Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Yeah, that was actually Aloysius Schwann. Schwanny,
Andy great, is about great. On the floor in the Schwanny, sports studio.
That was Schwanny, goody.
Great grandfather, who
beautiful.
Was Aloysius Potty Mouth Schwann, as he was known back then. Yeah.
The King of Bleep.
The King of Bleep. Have a special visitor. A special visitor from the East with us this morning. Swanee, I'll give you $10,000 if you can tell me what this music is. Attention, Swanee.
I'm listening. Swanee. I'm trying to come up with a name. I can't.
But you fell asleep again. Andy, do you know?
I think I do.
I think Andy may know because he knows who our next guest is.
Yeah.
Well, Schwanee, the show's over at 1 o'clock, so I'm afraid your time is up.
All right.
This would be the theme song for the Pittsburgh Penguin hockey team, NHL hockey team.
Oh, so it's not Mannix.
Andy, I'll give you $10,000 if you know who Mannix is.
I do know who Mannix is.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
The reason that we play this is one of Chicago's very own, one of WGN's very own, has returned home as the Pittsburgh Penguins are facing the Chicago Blackhawks later on today. He is the one and the only Joe Brand is back here at WGN this morning. Hey, buddy.
I mean, this was perfect with the music. You still got it, Dean, and Schwanee still got it, too. I said hi to him about 10 minutes ago, and he already forgot I was in here.
Par for the course.
I'll give him $10,000 if he knows my name. I don't mean the nickname that you usually
I was going to say,
use.
You might have you need the bleep button.
Yeah, well,
times.
I think we already know his bleep history. First of all, it's fantastic to see you. One of my favorite people who worked here at WGN. For how many years, Joe, were you here?
Two. No. I started as an intern like 10 years ago.
Wow.
But then, yeah, got to do some producing and then reporting and then podcasting and was lucky enough to move up in the Blackhawks broadcast booth and landed this gig with the Penguins. And it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you are now the radio play-by-play man for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And we'll be doing the game for your stations tonight. We'll also have the games here on WGN, of course. 4:30 pregame, 5 o'clock is when the game will start. So how are you enjoying it? How are you enjoying Pittsburgh?
I really am enjoying it a lot. I was telling you off the air that I hadn't been there until the interview, and I never really knew anything about Pittsburgh. And once I started telling people I was moving there, they only had glowing things to say, yeah. And I've pretty much felt that. It's been a lot of fun. It's already starting to feel like home. It's a little weird being back here today, going into a hotel in Chicago.
Yeah.
Andy and I were
I know that
yeah,
feeling.
Swapping stories.
You steal a lot of shampoo while you're there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have to bring another suitcase so that I can, yeah, towels, robes.
Right. Bath mats, yeah, exactly.
And I travel with my voting stickers, too, so you know, it's got to fill up.
See, I taught you well, Joe.
Yeah, attaboy.
Good man.
Any surprises taking over for, you know, it's a pretty major franchise. You're the head guy of the radio broadcasts. I mean, it's a big deal. What were your biggest surprises going into this?
Sometimes I kind of try to force myself to forget, you know, how many people are on the edge of their seats wondering what Sidney Crosby's going to do. It's very big because it's such a big franchise that has generated so many followers, and I knew that going in. But then once you really get settled into Pittsburgh, I mean, there's people that aren't sports fans, but they're just Penguins fans.
Yeah.
And they follow the team, live and die with it. And, you know, Andy knows you would take any one of these gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And then to land with this team, this franchise, a very stoic franchise, 5 championships since 1991. No other NHL team has done that.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool, and I like the similarities with Pittsburgh to Chicago. Very blue collar, hardworking. The people are so proud to be from there, and I feel like they go out of their way to make sure you're having a good time, to make sure you're feeling comfortable. And I think part of that is they want you to go back and tell people how great Pittsburgh is. Yeah. So I feel like I'm trying to do that now.
Yeah, I've never been either. I mean, yeah. I don't know what kind of image I even have in my mind of. You know, I think, you know, I don't know, steel mills. And I mean, that's the first thing that comes to my mind.
It's very yellow.
I'm sure.
Very yellow.
Really?
A lot of yellow bridges. Okay. And
a lot of bridges.
Yeah, a lot of bridges. Everyone's just wearing Steelers, Penguins, or Pirates gear all the time, too.
Okay.
All right. And it's very hilly. Like, a lot of uphill streets and sharp turns. And it's someone categorized it as... Pittsburgh's a place where you can see where you want to go, but it takes so long to get there because you have to take all these twists and turns. I've never been more appreciative of the grid system in Chicago since moving to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's a very Chicago is a very doable city if you don't know where you're going. GPS, I think, though, has probably changed all of that. What do you miss most about being home?
I don't
besides
know.
Dave Schwann's.
Yeah, case. Yeah, because, I mean, we talk almost every night, so that helps. That scratches the itch.
Put you to sleep? Help you fall asleep? I know it does the job for me hourly, between 9 and 1.
I think just maybe like...
Yeah, and you hang on my every word when I do the news.
Oh, now he's paying attention.
I think it's just, you know, the usual staples that I miss. I really haven't gotten pizza in Pittsburgh yet. Mm. I have... been really impressed by the food scene. It has been great, but I'm a little cautious about my first pizza experience.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, just like, you know, local neighborhood joints that are a staple I could always rely on. But I was telling you, like, my favorite thing now is just going to a different restaurant every day with my wife.
Sure.
and trying a new one and never going to someplace twice. So yeah, I'm just kind of trying to embrace the change because I never knew what life would be like outside of Chicago, and just enjoying the ride right now.
Yeah. Now, for your first season there, right?
Yeah.
It's been 1 year. You have broadcast some milestone moments. That must have been thrilling. And if this question sounds really authoritative and like I know what I'm talking about, it's because producer Jack, who's leaving us here in a couple of weeks. He's going to be going to work on John Landecker's show.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Yeah. So
breaking news. Schwanny, where were you?
Yeah, we've only got...
Oh, we've been talking about it for several weeks.
I must have missed those weeks.
Yeah, we've only got Jack Hammer for a couple of more weeks here.
I'm bringing in records next
week. But he was the one. I said, give me a good question for Joe that'll really make me sound like I know what I'm talking about with this. So, Joe, you've broadcast some milestone moments over your first season.
Wow, yeah, absolutely. Great question, Dean.
Thank you very much.
No, number one, Jack's the man. thing I miss most about Chicago, probably Jack Heinrich. It's been really cool. Sidney Crosby's 600th career goal, Evgeny Malkin's 500th career goal, Crosby passing Mario Lemieux in most assists with the Pittsburgh Penguins, most points. And then most recently, Crosby collected or guaranteed, I should say, his 20th consecutive season averaging at least a point per game. And that's more than Wayne Gretzky. And right now we've got Alex Ovechkin knocking on Wayne Gretzky's goal scoring record.
Yep.
And I'm not going to get into the conversation of which one is more impressive, but the Crosby statistic is pretty insane. 20 straight years being the most consistent player in hockey ever.
Jack, what is your what do you miss most? You worked closely with Joe when he was here on WGN.
The 2 a.m. requests that I texted him.
What do you miss most about working with Joe?
He just was such a good mentor to me. Just getting on air, he's always willing to
more
share
than
advice.
I am. More than I am?
He was like 1A, 1B.
Oh, okay.
Stick to the script, Jack.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
I'll see my way out of the conversation, too.
Andy, too. Andy's top three. We should have stuck to the script.
I mean, anyway. Bob Ferguson is right over there. You're just going to leave him out?
I mean, we just grew close over the couple of years, so it was weird not seeing you at the beginning of Hawks season, but, I mean, it's cool to follow your journey. But, yeah, just hanging out with you, really.
A little too close. He was calling me for rides home when I was gone. And
You know, I don't think he was doing this when you were here, but Jack has filled in doing sports many times on the air.
Yeah.
Not only for Blackhawks games, but just, you know, sports casts and so forth. So I think your mentorship of him really paid off, because he sounds fantastic when he's on the air. He clearly knows what he's talking about and deserves so much more than this little dairy wagon that we have here on Sunday morning.
Everything that Jack knows, Mark Carmen taught him.
There we go.
But no, that's the cool thing about this place is it's, you know, a stoic radio station and historic, and it still provides opportunities for people like me when I was an intern. I mean, Dave Enick could not be more gracious, give me a chance of getting on the air one time, you know, just to show like, hey, I feel like I can do this.
As an intern.
Bro. As an intern, right. Yeah. And yeah. Then, I mean, just, you know, you try to tell as many people as you can what you want to do and get those opportunities, but you still have to get them. They still have to be provided to you. And I mean, I owe so much to this place, because I couldn't have called a hockey game on the air without this place. And you know, they let me go down to Rockford to do some minor league games just to sharpen my play-by-play skills, and that meant the world to me. I don't have this right now without that. So it's a really special place, and that's why I was so eager to get back here this morning.
Speaking of minor league games, I saw you on Facebook holding up some gigantic rings really, you know, amazing that one hand could hold the weight of what these rings must have been.
A ring that I'll probably never wear, too. When am I going to wear that thing?
If you're Dan Hampton, every single day.
Well, see, I'm not Dan Hampton. Yeah. I don't feel like I deserved it. Yeah, the Kane County Cougars won the Miles Wolf Cup Championship. It's the American Association. It's minor league baseball. But I was there 10 years. They won the championship my first year and my last year. Now, when they won the last year, I was already in Pittsburgh. So my partner, Connor Klingon, who took over for me, he got to call that. But I was happy for him because I got to call the championship my first year when I was filling in for Wayne Randazzo.
Wow.
And Wayne Randazzo is now the television voice of the LA Angels. So it was a cool bookend experience, and same thing with Kane County, like provided me all these opportunities to cut my teeth on air. Also, like, kind of showed credibility to here. Like, I would work here at night producing Blackhawks games, and then once summer rolled around, I would do Kane County. So, you know, I was able to do on-air stuff while living in Chicago and then keeping my foot in the door here, which is always part of the plan. And, yeah, like I said, it just provided a lot of opportunities here.
847 area code says, good to hear Joe on WGN again. Ask him how the winters are in Pittsburgh.
That's funny, because the first snowstorm we got, everyone was giving me flack, saying I brought the bad weather to Pittsburgh because
it's
from Chicago.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm used to this stuff. And it's been one of the worst winters ever in Pittsburgh now. Somebody told me that they bought a bag of salt in 2019, and they just finished it this past January.
Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting, because it got a lot of snow. I was the only one shoveling the sidewalk. I think all my neighbors were giving me a weird look. The next day, all the snow's gone, because it's just, I don't know if it's the sun
or
the elevation. Yeah, it just melts away. But yeah, everyone told me it's much more of a mild winter than Chicago. And I'm like, I want my money back. What are you talking about? This is, it's been a little rough, but, yeah, excited for my first summer in Pittsburgh too.
708 Pittsburgh is the only city where all the sports teams share the same colors.
Yeah.
That must be all the yellow that you're talking
about. Yes, it is. And it's funny too, because the Penguins used to be baby blue, and in the 70s they changed because the Steelers were winning all their Super Bowls. And they're like, all right, we're not going to be the odd man out. We're just going to jump on the bandwagon. Went black and gold.
847, I was in Pittsburgh once, interrupted a mailman who was speaking to a policeman in Pittsburgh to ask for directions. I thought the two were going to beat each other up because they couldn't agree on the directions. I love that. That would make me love the city if that was a first exposure for
me. That's so wholesome.
Yeah, I love that. Schwanee, do you have a question for Joe?
Sorry, we had to wake you up again, Joe.
No, I've just been taking all of this in and listening to
you. Don't you want to ask a question about milestone moments or anything
Milestone moments. But no, we actually answered many of the questions here. The winters, the pizza, so I have to say I miss working with you here, Joe, and, you know, the good times we had. What a sense of humor you have, and I know you bring that to the games when you do them there. So bottom line is, I think it's fine.
Just fine. Okay.
Yeah, I think
all
it's
right.
fine.
Everything's just fine.
Yeah, everything's just fine. Do they have a signature food in Pittsburgh? Do
they have like a pierogies? They throw their French fries on sandwiches and even their salads.
Coleslaw on the Permane Brother.
Yeah, yeah. Permane Brothers is the big sandwich place. I feel like I'm missing something else. But yeah, definitely pierogies and French fries. I've been really impressed with the food scene. It's really good. Just haven't dipped my toe in the pizza.
You haven't had
world
time yet to get out there. Yeah. You've been busy. Yeah.
Take your time. There's plenty. Well, and always know that our food is better here no matter what it is. it's fantastic to see you. You look great. You look so happy with your new position. You seem, you know, like you're just loving every minute. And as somebody who's followed you from day one, I couldn't be happier for you. Well, I appreciate you coming in this morning and saying hi.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and the feeling is mutual. Likewise, this is a very special place to me. You guys are also very special people. It means a lot to me being here, and I'm having a blast. I'm really excited for tonight. It's going to be a little weird.
Just go to the right booth. Remember that.
Yeah, like I said, Troy Murray might lock me out of the other one.
It's always weird that first time back. Yeah. Old habits die hard.
Yeah. Pittsburgh Penguins radio play-by-play man, former WGN. Well, you'll always be a WGNer.
Well, I don't know. I didn't get allowed into the building. My badge doesn't work anymore. Oh, so
that's Schwani has given instructions downstairs to not let certain people in the building.
I'm trying to work on that for a certain person who hosts the Sunday show, but that's not working.
Is your microphone out again? Oh, too bad. It turned off. What do you know? Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Yeah. Time for the Week in Theater segment. What's going on stage in Chicago? One of the greatest musicals of all time, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, just closing at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire. And they are getting ready for their next production, Titanic the Musical, as they continue their 50th anniversary season. Believe it or not, the Marriott is celebrating 50 years, not only of theater, but this incredible resort, which is a golf course, a PGA golf course, a spa, 40,000 square feet of meeting space, amazing restaurants, and but the theater scene out at the Marriott has always been incredible. I've seen some of my favorite shows done by Marriott casts under whether it was the previous executive producers like Peter Marston or Peter Marston, but Kerry Walker and Terry James, and now Peter Blair, the current executive producer, who joins us on the phone line right now. Peter, happy anniversary to all of you out at the Marriott.
Thank you. 50 years. Can you believe it?
I cannot.
Yeah, me neither.
Because, I feel like I've been covering it for pretty much since the beginning. I know it hasn't been 50 years, but it's been 30, I'll bet, of your 50. Talk to me a little bit about the history of the theater at the Marriott Lincolnshire.
Well, like you said, 50 years is a pretty big accomplishment for any performing arts organization, I think. The resort, when it was built 50 years ago, and I'm not even 50 years old, so the theater and hotel are older than I am, but as I understand it, there was nothing out there. It was very rural. There were cornfields and things across the street, and they decided to build this big resort there, and I'm not sure whose idea it was to put a theater in there too. As far as I understand, Marriott said, every new resort's going to have a theater, and we'll start there. And we're still the only one, so maybe they didn't love that idea or realized it's a little harder than they thought.
Yeah, it's such a good idea, unique though. Yeah, such a good idea.
Yeah,
because people who live in that area, they don't want to come all the way downtown. It's a long drive. It's very expensive.
Yeah.
To make a night of it is quite a big deal. But you get to the Marriott, and everything's right there. If you want to have dinner, you want to see the show, you decide you want to stay, you make a weekend of it, whatever it is. It is incredibly all-inclusive. And, you know, I've always, not to mention, you guys have produced so many great shows. I know that you weren't there for some of them, but looking back on the history of the Marriott, what do you think are some of the highlight moments there?
Well, I think the highlights for the theater and for, you know, on the production side are the shows that everyone says, huh, how's Marriott going to pull that one off? And the before I was there, it was Miss Saigon, which was one of the big sort of regional premieres after the show had played on Broadway, and everyone said, okay, the Marriott, that little stage in the round, they're never going to pull this off. And it was a few years before me, but by all accounts, it was a major triumph. And then one of my first jobs at Marriott was a production assistant. So I was the guy making coffee and mopping the floors and, you know, running backstage and stuff. And one of the last shows I worked on in that job was Les Miserables, which again was sort of like, giant show, how are they going to do it? And it was just beautiful. And so I think those are sort of the ones that are those sort of artistic triumphs. Because we're so creative with the lights and the sound and the way we use the space, the same with Titanic coming up, it's like, it's a giant show about a giant object and how they're going to do it. And I think the way the team is putting this together is really beautiful, just sort of a lot of, you know, the way they move the actors, the way we use lights and sound, and use the interesting space to our advantage, as opposed to trying to sort of go like, how are we going to replicate what they did in New York or on tour and that sort of thing. So
yeah, it was,
I think we're still around because of our creativity.
Yeah, it was a big deal, though. I mean, one of the first shows that I covered out there was Miss Saigon. And, you know, all the talk was, how are they going to do the famous helicopter scene?
Yeah.
And you guys did pull it off. And same with Les Mis. How are they going to do the, you know, the incredible finale to the show on a stage which is in the round? And, you know, there's just been nothing but creativity. You talk about Titanic, the musical, which will be your next show. And let me see here. The previews begin April the 9th. The show opens April the 16th and will run through June the 1st. In addition to Titanic, the musical, what do you have coming up for your 50th anniversary season there?
Well, you just played a little bit of the Joseph music as we were coming in here, which was an absolute smash for us. I was so happy with how it turned out, and it exceeded all our expectations. It closed a week ago, and we dearly miss it. But after Titanic, which is a show we've wanted to do for several years and finally found a season to do it in, the next thing up for the summer is a world premiere called Always Something There, which is a all 80s hits from, you know, Madonna and Whitney Houston. And it's one of the things that's always been important to the theater is premiering new work. You know, selfishly, because we've been around so long, we need new shows. And we think it's sort of our duty to also create new shows for the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been important in our history, and it's been a few years since we've done one. So we're real excited to do another world premiere. And then after that is Catch Me If You Can, which is based on a true story of, there was a book and a movie that people are really familiar with.
Yep.
And then that's by the composers of Hairspray. And then we close with Million Dollar Quartet Christmas, which is exactly what it sounds like. It is the sequel to Million Dollar Quartet. It's as if the band got back together a little bit later, reunited in the studio. And it's a mix of holiday music, but also just those sort of killer rock and roll tunes that those guys are known for.
Yeah, and that'll be November, December. We would be remiss if we didn't mention the Marriott Theater for young audiences, the children's shows that you put on, which I think are so great because it exposes kids to theater in many cases for the very first time.
Oh, we hear that over and over again, countless times, that, you know, I run into adults in the theater and they say, I've been coming for 30 years and it's only because my school came on a field trip and we saw this children's theater at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday or something like that.
All
and
right.
It really does. It instills that habit in them.
Yeah.
And we take it really seriously. We put as much care and craft into the children's shows as we do our main stage shows.
Yeah. And aren't you doing something special with the restaurants in the resort this year, where you're theming meals to the shows that you're putting on?
Yeah, so for the first time, we're partnering with the restaurant, the fine dining restaurant called Three Embers on property. And for the 50th anniversary, they had this idea to sort of create, it's almost a restaurant within a restaurant, that these pop-up experiences that are themed to the show we're doing. So the decor, the menu, the vibe, everything is shifting five times a year. So Joseph went great, and they're currently putting the finishing touches on the Titanic theme. But it's it's a new name, it's a new menu. It's a really cool experience and something we've never tried to sort of merge the theater and restaurant.
Sounds great. If people want to get info about Titanic, the musical, about your upcoming season, about the Marriott, what's the best way to get info on that?
MarriottTheater.com, and that's theater with an R-E, or give us a call at 847-634-0200, and our incredible box office staff will give you all the information you need.
Peter Blair is their executive producer, and I appreciate you joining us this morning. Happy anniversary. Look forward to seeing you out at the theater sometime soon.
Thanks so much. Thanks for the time, Dean.
Thank you very much, Peter. And coming up next, a major announcement about a downtown show which is going to be putting in permanent roots here. I'll tell you all about that next. And now, 10:50. And our Weekend Theater segment continues with the announcement of a downtown Chicago favorite show establishing a permanent residency here in downtown Chicago. Talking about Teatro Zanzani that we have talked about so many times on this show, the various incarnations of Teatro Zanzani, which is a dinner theater, number one. It's musical theater. It's cabaret. It's comedy. All done at the beautiful Hotel Cambria in Chicago. And I'm going to bring in the producer of Teatro Zanzani to join us on the show to give us all of the details about it. This is Norm Langhill. Hi, Norm. Welcome back to WGN.
Hey, Dean. Welcome to Sunday morning.
Yes, indeed. It's a place we like to hang out and talk theater every week. And we have done so many times with so many of your performers in Teatro Zanzani, which has come and gone in Chicago, as shows do. But now you have taken a rather unprecedented step in announcing a permanent residency here in downtown Chicago. Explain what this means.
Well, it means we're a continually operating style of theater. It's based on improv, comedy, and beauty, which are the key elements of romance. And we've had such a good time here, and there's such a great response from the community that we just wanted to announce we're not closing, which is standard message from theaters, but we never close.
Yeah, what do you think powers the amazing success of Teatro Zanzani here in the Chicago area?
Well, I think breaking down the fourth wall, all the performers animate, so you feel like you're more at a party than you are at a theatrical performance with there being no fourth wall. And it really involves the audience, and particularly in a restaurant environment where that table is your Ponderosa right there. You own it, and you can talk, you can get up, go to the bathroom, you can laugh, you can enjoy it at your leisure, so to speak, and be sort of part of the action. And that was the big discovery we got, we put together about 25 years ago, and audiences have really responded to it.
Yeah, you've had such an amazing array of talent as part of your show. And I think, you know, that's also why it's done so well here, because you can see Teatro Zanzani and then see it again, a few months later, and it's a completely different show. You know, it still is the basics of comedy and music and dance and cabaret and acrobatics and so forth, but a whole new cast of characters, a whole new feeling. I came there on New Year's Eve I guess it was 2 years ago now, I had the best time on New Year's Eve. It was so fun. Yeah, it was so fun. And I got to say, every time I've come there, it's just nothing but laughs and great entertainment. So what will be the same? What will be different with this new permanent residency of Teatro Zanzani down at the Cambria Hotel in downtown Chicago?
Well, we'll be moving great international and local performers in and out all during this period, constantly adjusting the show. A large part of the comedy of the show is based on improv, playing with the audience. So that's a large reason why the show itself is quite different each time. We're also hosting another series. There's so many performers out there that we can't build a show around, but we're just going to bring them in under the guise of a program we call Club Zanzani. And our first artist is going to be Dina Martina, who's a really wacky drag queen. And he has a solo show, and he'll be there on May 21st. And that's just the first of about 20 different special events we're going to do in addition to our main show this year.
Will that be in the same area on the 14th floor of the Cambria Hotel?
Yeah, we'll be, yeah, the wonderful 14th floor, which, of course, used to be the Cook County Sheriff's court area for about 20 years. And everybody forgot that it was, in fact, a Masonic temple built over 50 years ago. And we put a Spiegel tent in there and built a beautiful lobby and space. And it's sort of a hidden gem in a loop. You don't really know it's there until you walk off the elevator.
Yeah, yeah. Now, as far as the actual Zanzani show itself, Teatro Zanzani, I know that some of the favorite performers will be staying with the show to continue to entertain here, right?
Yeah, Liv Warfield will be with us in the summer. She won the Golden Buzzer on America's Got Talent, and Kevin Kent. And then we have a surprise guest coming in June, and a nationally known comedian will be coming in with Kevin, for Kevin. We're adding Daniela Bim, a Brazilian hair-hanging artist who's been in Cirque du Soleil for years and is a wonderful comedian on top. So we always look for artists that have a great act and are funny and beautiful. And just, again, reminding you, comedy is the first step in a great romance, and then beauty comes second.
Yeah.
So we're always looking for that in every performer.
Did you say hair-hanging?
Hair-hanging, yes.
Hair-hanging.
I know, I could describe it more, but...
Oh, that's very descriptive, yeah. It just, you know, leaves me out of, you know, being able to relate to it in any way.
Well, you know, can imagine if gravity was not an issue for a dancer, what kind of shapes could they make in the air with their body?
Yeah.
And it's a stunning act that you just think, oh, my God, I've never seen that. I've never seen that. So she was very funny on top.
Yeah.
And beautiful.
I think it's great. I've enjoyed the show from day one. I've enjoyed all the changes in the show as, you know, this has gone on. It's a great place. If you have visitors in town, you know, and you want to take them out for a really entertaining night, this is the show to come and see. I mean, it's become so signature to downtown Chicago now, and now has establishing this permanent residency here at the Cambria Hotel, 14th floor, right on Randolph Street. Are tickets available now for the... for the, you know, near future?
Yeah, they're available all through September, and we're also selling group sales for the holiday season because everybody's preparing for that period now. So
sure.
Those single tickets will go on sale for the holiday season sometime in the late summer.
Okay, that sounds great. If people want to get more information on this, if you go to zinzani.com/Chicago, zinzani.com/Chicago. You can get more information on the new Teatro Zanzani here in downtown Chicago.
Yeah, and I will say, Dean, we're exploring the idea of invisible Chicago this summer. The Chicago that only if you live here in a town and it's very proud of itself, and rightfully so. What are the secret places that visitors should know about?
Yeah, this is it's a great spot, a great venue. Norm Langhill is the producer of Teatro Zanzani. Appreciate you joining us. And Norm, we look forward to seeing you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. It sounds like our cell phone line's just about to jump out at us anyway. So, you know, I like to check in with Andy Mazur so I can sound more knowledgeable about things I know absolutely nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
The NCAA final is tonight?
The men's final is tomorrow.
Oh, men's final is tomorrow.
Yeah, the women's championship is this afternoon in Tampa.
Okay, all right. Because somebody texted and asked, you know, where will I be able to see the men's final? The NCAA.
Yeah, you can hear the men's final starting at 6 o'clock tomorrow right here on WGN Radio.
Oh.
I know that for a fact. I'm not sure which TV network they're going to – I'm going to look this up because, you know, they have TBS and TNT and
some
also
streaming
CBS.
And
yeah, they have a bunch of that going on. So give me one moment and I will find out exactly when it's going to happen
so
for you.
So really it's sports broadcasting. The way God intended.
Yeah,
here on
the wheel.
Radio.
Correct.
Here on radio.
And if you want to watch it, it'll be on CBS tomorrow.
And really, do you need to see what's going on?
Honestly? No. I personally love doing play by play of basketball on the radio. It's you can paint that picture.
Much more visual than actually seeing.
Exactly, and you know you can kind of do other things a little bit. You know, if you've got things to emails to catch up on and things of that nature, you can still picture what's going on without having to glue yourself to the television set.
Right. And, Shawnee, haven't we learned that watching television is actually bad for your eyes?
Something like that, yes.
Yeah, don't sit too close.
I wear sunglasses now when I watch TV.
I wear a beekeeper suit.
Hazmat.
You and your hazmat suit.
I wear a beekeeper suit both when I'm watching television and when I'm on television.
Do you put the I voted sticker on it?
You stop bringing it up.
You should show up when you go in the next time with your beekeeper suit on.
You do
and
one,
see if you're admitted.
One little joke at 9:03 this morning.
Yep.
9:07.
And Shawnee has been pounding it into the ground.
Got to hold on to that one thing.
Yep. Like he's a caveman washing his loincloth. Sheesh. Predictions for the game tomorrow?
It's pretty interesting this matchup. Houston, and you can impress your friends by saying this.
Oh, wait. Maybe I might know this. Didn't they turn things around after they were losing the game?
They were down 14 points.
And they came back and wound up winning.
And they came back and they won 70-67 over Duke.
Yeah.
That's
a big deal, too.
Yeah.
Pull an upset like that on Duke.
Correct.
See, I know some things.
Good call. Yeah, you were paying attention. I like that.
I know some things.
So Houston is one of the teams that'll be there. Florida is the other team. Florida yesterday had a hard-fought victory over Auburn by 6 points to advance.
I love her, too.
Yeah, so Auburn hair. And it'll be Florida and Houston for the championship.
Okay.
These are – everybody was – you know, remember I told you last week the Final Four was all chalk. Because it was all number one seeds for the first time since 2008.
Yes,
and these two teams kind of emerged as the two best going into the tournament. They're both on winning streaks coming in, and both feature tremendous guard play, and both feature a lot of good inside play as well, which is what gets you wins in the tournament. Houston's got a well-versed and veteran coach by the name of Kelvin Sampson. And Todd Golden is the head coach of the Florida Gators, who is kind of early on in his career there. But I was watching both of the games last night, and Houston's defense is ridiculous. I mean, what they did to Duke in the end of the game last night.
Ridiculously good.
Ridiculously good, yeah. I mean, just stupidly good. And they forced turnover after turnover because they did a what they call a full court press. So that's picking up the defense in the backcourt, not waiting until the team gets across the midcourt line to kind of force the action a little bit. And Duke had several turnovers because they couldn't get the ball in. And it just interrupted their entire offense. It's hard to go against a really good defense in the national championship game. I'd like to see Florida win it. I think that's a good story with Florida. They have Walter Clayton Jr. Every time I hear the announcers say, I'm thinking they're talking about Walter Payton. Right. But it's Walter Clayton Jr., who is a sharp shooting guard that basically carried Florida to the win yesterday. But man, Houston's defense is suffocating, and it's hard to think that they'll give up enough points for Florida to win the game tomorrow. So I'm looking at Houston as my winner tomorrow.
So it's going to be a good game tomorrow night.
It should be. You know, the final four games were really good. I mean, even to the Elite Eight. And I know a lot of people were complaining because there weren't any Cinderellas in there, and there weren't a lot of lower seeds that were playing. It was a lot of ones, twos, and threes. I mean, listen, you have to understand with the state of college basketball these days, and those, you know, the lower seeds are teams that are mid-majors that keep their players for several years. They have cohesive units that work together and have been teammates for three, sometimes four, and sometimes even 5 years, thanks to the COVID year. But basically what happens with these high major teams is it almost becomes an all-star team because they have the transfer portal where teams from the mid-majors will think, okay, well, I can get bigger NIL money, and I can also have a chance to play in the NCAA tournament and perhaps win a championship. So they like to go to places where they have established coaching staffs that can develop, and this is what's happening. So the powerhouse conferences are the ones that are dominating now, and they're not letting a lot of the littler colleges and little conferences really share in any of the enjoyment of the tournament.
All right, back to our original point. You can hear the game here on WGN tomorrow night, the men's final.
Correct, starting at 6.
6 o'clock tomorrow night.
Yeah, and then the women's championship game is today, which should be a good one as well because South Carolina is defending its championship. They won the Gamecocks won the title last year, and UConn, I hope Molina's not listening, beat UCLA the other day. Really kind of whooped them up. Yeah, yeah. UConn's got a couple of really, really good players and a well-established coach. They were the dominant team for a lot of the early part of the 2000s and 2010s. So this should be a good game.
So Andy's going to be busy working
all day.
Shawnee, did you want to come over and we can watch the game together?
Why, certainly.
What are you bringing?
Oh, I don't know. What would you like me to bring?
I was thinking that you and I would have like an Andy Griffith marathon.
We could do that.
Oh, wow.
While the game is on. Don't you think that suits us?
That'd be great, yeah.
A little more?
I think that would be perfect.
I do, and we can play over and over again the episode where Opie is running the track and field competition.
Yeah. Oh, keep it sports related.
Keep it sports related. Yeah. Exactly.
Yes. Like you can do that stupid I voted sticker joke about 20 more times. It's Dean Richards Sunday morning. WGN, this is the music that Shawnee insists that we play when he enters the newsroom on Sunday morning. Every time I look at you, very regal indeed. Coming up later, speaking of, we are going to play more of our A-list interviews with the cast of the very popular movie and TV franchise, The Chosen, story about Jesus Christ that is worldwide phenomenally popular right now as we get set for Easter Sunday. So that's going to be coming up in a little while. Also, speaking of Easter, we're going to get into some Easter recipes coming up in a little while. Today, I want to share my mom's recipe for her famous deviled eggs that she made. There wasn't a place that my mom went where deviled eggs or anything. My mom was a phenomenal cook. But if she would bring deviled eggs to a family function, a party, whatever, they're gone in a minute. They were truly the most delicious deviled eggs that anyone had ever had. And I'm going to share her recipe. I'm actually going to make them on my TV cooking segment this coming Wednesday on the Big Number 9. But this morning, I'm going to give you the recipe. Actually, what I'm going to do, I was going through some old recordings, and I found a recording of my mother coming on the radio show 10 years ago to share her deviled egg recipe. Now, I haven't played any recordings of my mom since she passed away in 2020. It was just really hard to hear her voice, you know, after she passed away. It's very emotional. But I found this recording at home. It's like, okay, let me listen to it at home, where if I break down, at least it'll be private. And it was emotional, I will say. But I'm going to share that recording today, Andy. So you may need to comfort me later.
Okay, I'll come into the studio and be there just in case you need me.
If you could burp me, that would be good.
What a visual that is.
Nothing to do with being emotional, but just think it would be funny if you burped me. I don't know if you ever had an experience like that. Shwani, have you heard recordings of your dad since he's...
Yes, I have. Oh, away? Yeah. Yeah. In fact...
isn't it weird to hear their
voice? It is. And you know, seriously, for me, it was rather comforting. It was rather comforting. I don't know, about 4 or 5 years before Dad passed away, I spent a morning doing a video interview with him on his life, talking about growing up and that sort of thing, and working and his feelings on the state of the world, actually. And some of that is on my YouTube page right now, but wasn't too long after he passed away, which is now 3 years ago, that I listened to one or two of those, and I know what you mean about it being very emotional and being reluctant to listen, but when I did, it gave me some comfort. It really did.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad that you got the comfort. I was emotional listening to it.
Sure. Oh, sure.
Because it just reminded me how much I miss my mom.
Absolutely.
But she was funny in the interview. You know how she would come on the show?
Oh, yeah.
And say goofy
things. Oh, yeah. Like, in fact, you had her telling jokes on one show
right.
Time.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like her famous yogurt recipe that she gave us. She came on and told us how to make Greek yogurt. And everybody still talks about this. I mean, she wasn't trying to be funny when she said to put you have to leave the yogurt, in a flat surface, untouched, so I put a heating pad on it.
Right.
In bed. Of course, the bed has to be made first.
Of course.
Okay, that's step one for me.
When I say goofy, she just had a funny way.
The bed has to be made first.
She just has a funny way of putting things. So, I'm listening to this and really missing, I'm hearing her voice. This was before she got sick, before the Alzheimer's really kicked in and the dementia really kicked in and, it got really difficult. To hear her voice after not hearing it for 5 years is, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to what I'm talking about. But then I'm listening to it and she's saying goofy things on it, so it's like... Yep, that's my mom.
Yeah, all right. Right. So that kind of brings you around a little bit.
It kind of made it a little kind of made it a little better. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're gonna play that just right after 12 noon today. So we'll see. And Andy has agreed to burp me.
Yes.
For some reason. For some reason I asked. And he's agreed to do it.
I'm here for you.
Would you like to be burped, Shwani?
Oh, I don't think anybody has to to do it for
you're okay for me. In that department yes, by yourself.
All right, as Andy will attest,
yes, he is.
All right, Gassy McGassington. people. I've had quite a few texts about this morning because we're going to talk about the deviled egg recipe later, but but I'm going to actually make it on TV on Wednesday. And people are saying, with the higher cost of eggs, is this something that you should be cooking?
Good question.
It's Easter. Yes, it is something you should be cooking. You don't have to make 100 of them. You can get a dozen eggs now for $4 or, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood. $4 or $5, something like that. If they fall off the back of a truck, they're even cheaper than that.
That's right.
Come on. Yeah, no, I'm not. Somebody said, can you substitute potatoes? Well, that would be potatoes. How do you substitute potatoes? You have to have an egg to take the egg yolk out of, make the mixture, and put it back in the white. So, no, you can't substitute the potatoes with this. You know, come on, splurge. $4 for a dozen eggs, not that bad.
Is there a certain spice or...
yes, that's what she's... That
is involved with the deviled eggs here?
And there was, until I listened to the... I thought that I had mastered her recipe just by memory. You know, just by trial and error. Let me try this. Let me taste. Try, taste, try, taste. There turns out there was a secret ingredient that is in this recording that she reveals. So, yeah, we'll get to that.
After 12 o'clock.
After 12 o'clock.
Okay.
Will you be here?
I will.
All right.
I will be.
All right. Listen anyway. As they say.
I haven't had... I take that back. I have had deviled eggs.
Deviled eggs are so good.
Yeah.
I know. So
I did have them recently.
Some people don't like... They don't want anything to do with hard-boiled eggs. I should ask Andy about this. He's the finicky eater on the show.
Take a hard pass.
Hard pass on hard-boiled eggs or deviled eggs or any kind of egg.
Yeah. I like eggs. I like scrambled eggs.
Yep. But not the hard-boiled?
No.
I'll take them any way they're made.
This is good.
It's all about consistency for me.
Yeah, I guess. Okay.
How are you doing on the cruciferous vegetables?
I'm doing well. I'm doing great. I'm doing fine. I think they're fine.
I'll take your word for it. Okay.
Hey, speaking of food, there was a big online rumor going on this week that In-N-Out Burger was going to open a location here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And turns out it was a big fat lie. It had gotten everywhere. I don't know where it started. I think it may have started as a TikTok or...
April Fool's, maybe?
Maybe April Fool's. I don't know. Yeah. But, I mean, it spread like wildfire, because how great would that be to have an In-N-Out Burger in the Chicago area? Have you had?
Oh, I've had out in California.
Oh, they're so good. Chwani?
I think I had one a long time ago out in California.
Have you double-doubled at all, ever?
No, I don't know if I double-doubled, but I do think we did go to an In-N-Out.
They very wisely put one right near LAX Airport.
That is wise.
So when when I'm coming and going from L.A., I somehow always find time to get over there and get myself a double-double. It's a good burger. They make a good burger. So the rumor was spreading like wildfire that it was going to, coming to Chicago, coming to Chicago, coming to Chicago. Not true.
So how did that get started in the first place?
All you news people, all your fake news. I'm putting a tariff on you right now. 11:36. To make that 11:36. Dean Richards Sunday morning, and time for our A-list interviews with the stars. Sponsored by the Lyric Opera of Chicago. And this week, more of the stars of one of the hottest movies/TV series that's out there right now. It is television's The Chosen.
The hour is coming.
God is the ruler, yet.
It is just an amazing series that's begun its fifth season now. It has begun its fifth season in motion picture theaters on big screen. Last week, they released a couple of episodes This past Friday, they released a couple of episodes. And next Friday, leading up to Easter, they're going to be releasing a couple of more episodes of the story of the final days of Jesus Christ. Last week, we featured my one-on-one interviews that I did at the world premiere of the new season in Dallas, Texas, with Dallas Jenkins, who is the creator and the director of the show, and also Jonathan Romey, who plays Jesus Christ. We had some great conversations with some of the other cast members, though, that I wanted to share with you and give their perspectives on the popularity of this series and taking on these names that we know from the Bible, Simon and Andrew and John, Mary Magdalene and Matthew. In this first set of interviews, actor Shahar Isaac, who plays Simon and Peter, Noah James, who plays Andrew, and an Australian actor, George H. Xanithes, who plays John in the series The Chosen.
Can you talk to me a little bit about the phenomenal success of this? It's mind-blowing to me, maybe to you, far exceeding your expectations of what you thought this might be when you first joined the cast?
Yeah, like, if you can simultaneously have the feeling that this show is going to be big, but also not anticipate that your face will be plastered all over Times Square,
yeah.
And that's kind of where I existed. I thought that first script was phenomenal, and it's actually a moment in season one that Dallas had with me privately, but he has since kind of shared it with the rest of the world. He actually thought there was a moment in season one that I think articulates the success of the show so well. Is he says to me, I'm really worried about this scene, and it's when Jesus comes down to Peter's eye level, Simon Peter's eye level at the miracle of the fish. I said, why are you worried about that? And he said, well, this is the first time Jesus will have come down to somebody's eye level. This is usually a scene depicted with Peter crumbling at the floor and Jesus above him. And I think when we brought Jesus down and the disciples down to everyone's eye level, as we say, brought them off the stained glass windows, I think that's when it became more accessible. And when something's accessible, it's watchable. And this show is just, I think that's the success of the show, is that it is accessible for everybody.
Yeah, I forget where I was driving someplace and saw a billboard. And there you all are up on this billboard.
The irony saying the stained glass windows are maybe where we are.
No longer on the window, but you are on Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah, yeah.
But I actually remember, I don't know if you remember this, but we were in these vans driving through just mud and wilderness getting to one of the sets. And the conditions were quite interesting, I'll put it that way. And we got out of the van. We're in like these giant rain boots. And Shahar gets out and he's like, no pictures. Because it was like the least sort of this kind of vibe of all time. Yeah, yeah. And so to go from that in season one to where we are now is, yeah, in Times Square. Kind of makes no sense. And yet, because we went into it trying to tell this story the best way we possibly could, accessible, authentic, I think that really resonated with people. And then it makes sense that it's gone global. Because we've kept it intimate, small, authentic, it means people can really relate.
Yeah, it's really when you're working on the art, right? Instead of, let's make a hit.
Right.
Let's just make something that's so quality-filled.
That's what it is. I think it's exactly what it is. Mm. It's became a big thing, but it still remained the mom and papa store. Like, it's still, you know, it's still Dallas, and it's still the same kind of purity of intent to make something good and without any background noises and distractions, and focusing on the things that are not important, just to focus on the product itself, on the art itself, and that spirit, that kind of mom and papa shop spirit, family business spirit, has remained throughout this production until now, until today. As it grows, the work is actually exactly the same. So when when people ask about how things have changed, the truth is it hasn't changed that much, because we are still working on a very intimate and personal level, trying to get as deep as we can into these human beings' lives, actual lives. And so that is pretty, but really, honestly, that goes, you just met Dallas. That really does go. Dallas, you know, he walks the walk and talks the talk, and he really is that human being that is able to kind of encapsulate this environment and treat an entire cast of a company that is growing with hundreds of people now with respect to each person, so personal and respectful. And yeah, it's amazing. That is really one of the greatest things about being on this show.
I'll bet one of the things that has changed is your lives as actors, as people. Has it? I mean, there are chosen conventions now that go on, you know, and fan explosions. Mm. It has to have been life changing, is it?
Well, you're what you want to do as an actor is you want to tell an authentic story that just impacts people in some way. And I remember actually some fans visited our set. It was actually a couple of sisters, and the younger sister was diagnosed with cancer, and the older sister was at school, and some people were teasing her about her sister like losing her hair and whatnot. And she said to like her mom, like they both reminisced that she felt like the Sons of Thunder in that moment where they just wanted to go at the Samaritans, and it took that, you know, watching that moment in the show to hold them back, that Jesus rebuke, to kind of be like, no, even though you may not be very happy with what they've said, you know, tone it down a little bit and you know, approach it with righteousness. And to hear that story, it's just like, that's what you dream of. That is a dream come true as an actor. Not necessarily that moment for the poor girl, but the thing that, oh, they learned something from the show and it's inspired them in some way to live a better life. I mean, you couldn't ask for much more.
But I mean, going to the grocery store, you know, do you have encounters like that where people are, I know it's been the case with Jonathan where he's been just living his life, and someone said, "There's Jesus in the grocery store." You know,
it definitely does happen. And so, what's funny about it is, like, I remember the first sort of times that it started. I was checking in for a flight, and the woman behind the counter was checking me and kept looking at me, kind of strange. And I kept looking around like, am I not supposed to be in this aisle? Like, I didn't understand that she was recognizing me from the show. So finally I said, am I in the wrong place? Like, why are you doing this? She said, no, you just kind of look like someone. I was like, oh yeah, I probably chosen. She's like, yeah. So it is funny because we don't take that too personally. You know, we know that it really is about this story and these characters. Yeah. And then the byproduct of that is honestly quite strange sometimes. But generally, people are just so sort of giving of their love and thanks about the show, which is so lovely.
How poignant is it that this season 5 now is going to premiere right during this year's holy season for Christians, for Jewish people, for most faiths are celebrating a time of renewal at this time of year. The thing about the show is really it's for everyone, isn't it?
It's absolutely for everyone. Anyone can find... These are genuinely, I think, interesting and capturing human beings and stories that I think anybody can watch and enjoy and find something for themselves in it. It can... Really, if anybody's on the fence whether to come and watch, I say watch the first episode of season 1, and I think it's not what you thought. It's not what you expected. I think it's going to surprise people who haven't watched it yet, because I really think it is accessible for everyone, and everyone can enjoy this story. And honestly, season 5 on the big screen, they really did something special this season with camera. It's all different style of photography, so I'm personally very, very excited to see it on a big screen. And this is a season that really is, if there is a chance, and I know again not everybody can go because of availability around the world and such, but if there is a chance, I think this is a season that will be fascinating. I'm very excited for tomorrow, because we saw screeners on a little laptops. Computers, yeah. Laptops and such, but I really can't wait.
That's how I watched some of the episodes for season 5 that they sent me. I actually can't wait to see it.
Yeah, to see it big. I'm like, cannot wait.
It makes such a big difference.
I think so, too. I think so,
when you see that. But, you know, while you're all talking about this as well, the thing that grabbed me about this when I saw episode 1, season 1, was how it is, as you're all saying, taken off the stained glass.
Totally.
of how relatable you all are,
yeah,
and how you're presented to us as regular people,
yeah,
who happen to be living at this time with this person. It makes it a much more relatable
story. How could it be any other way?
It's a fisherman down on his luck who will probably do anything to try and, you know, settle his tax debt with an oppressive Roman government. I mean, this is an historical drama for the ages. It is. I think that's another success of the show, is that it has approached this in a much different way than maybe other, you know, projects about Jesus' life may have had.
Shahar, Isaac, Simon, and Peter, Noah James, and George H. Xanithes, who plays John in a minute, the actress and actor who play Mary Magdalene, and Matthew from season 5 of The Chosen, next. All right, we continue now at 11:51 with more of the stars of The Chosen, Last Supper, season 5. We've talked with Jonathan Romey and the creator of the show. You just heard Simon, Andrew, and John. Now Mary Magdalene and Matthew, Elizabeth Tabish, and Paris Patel.
Can you talk to me a little bit about the phenomenal success of this? I mean, it has to blow everybody's mind at how phenomenally successful this has become. Liz, is that true?
It is. It's surreal, and it's hard to wrap my head around sometimes. The numbers, I can't make sense of them. And at the end of the day, you want to come back to set humble and focused on the story and focused on storytelling. So I it's really exciting to see how many people are excited about it, but I honestly try not to think about it too much because it's overwhelming a little bit.
Yeah. That's sort of a typical actor response. You don't want to acknowledge how popular you are. Paris, how about for you?
You know, it's just been interesting because I've learned to kind of ignore all the stuff that's happening because we started with something that was just very humble and small. We were a web series, and then to see where we are, like, launching globally, having a streaming partner and stuff, it's just been, like she said, surreal. But it's just been, I feel like we were chosen to experience this. So I'm just soaking that up and enjoying every experience. But yeah, I can't even find the words to explain because this is not how normal acting careers or go, I feel. I think we're getting to do it all. And I feel really grateful.
I wonder if this will be, or has it already been, a different kind of experience as actors where you're defined by these roles. You know, will it be hard for you to go do a musical, a comedy, you know, something after, you know, these two very profound roles? What do you think?
It's something that only time can tell, but it's such a wonderful role to get to play, and it is the first role that I've really connected with in such a meaningful and in sort of intense way. But we are actors, and like we want to continue to perform and to do lots of different genres and different styles of storytelling. So hopefully we're able to continue with that. Not despite the success, but possibly because of it, of the show.
Yeah. Why do you think this is connected in a way that no other biblical movie or series has? Story of Jesus, movie, anything? I mean, this is really connected in a way that no other movie or series has.
I think, you know, we all know these stories, but I think the secret sauce is that The Chosen tells it in a different way that kind of pulls at your heart or inspires you, and it digs deeper. And that's all to say that we are all, the show is portraying all the disciples as human, all the followers, even Jesus. He laughs, he tells jokes. So it makes it more relatable, right? So you're able to see versions of yourselves or just being inspired by that. And I think that's what's really got the world hooked onto the show, because it's humanizing it, so it makes it more relatable. So you feel like you can be in the show. You know, you're connecting to it that much.
Yeah, it's the very first thing that I thought of when I saw season 1, episode 1. It's like, wow, it's as and now has been described to me by Dallas.
taking it off the stained glass and making it much more relatable.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the secret sauce.
Yeah, and you're going to see that in season 5 because things get chaotic. They get ugly in a beautiful way, but it's very raw. There's raw emotion, and you see that in all our characters and what we go through.
Do you get reaction from people of all faiths on this? People think it's a story about Jesus that only certain people will watch it, but you must hear from other people as well, right?
There's all the various Christian denominations that all like it for different reasons. But I have, friends and family that aren't particularly religious, and some that are atheists that have watched this show that are a little more curious about this story and about what Jesus was teaching. And I think that's a testament to the quality of storytelling, where these are really fantastic storytellers, the writers and the editors and all of the actors, that you don't really have to have a faith background to enjoy it.
Yeah, Par, same for you.
Yeah,
this time when the world is so divided on so many things, this seems like it's bringing people together.
It's the one that's uniting people, right? I was in India. I've been to Brazil. I've been to different parts of the world, seeing the impact that the show is having, whether you're a believer or not. But a good story, a passionate story, something you can find yourself in, regardless of the backdrop of the theme, is going to inspire anybody, and you're going to see yourself in that. So, yeah, it's making a big impact with those who aren't from the same background. I think it's doing its thing. Yeah. It's exciting to see.
So we're just a few minutes away of replaying a conversation that we had with my mom 10 years ago on the show, giving us her deviled egg recipe. Thought it would be appropriate with, Easter right around the corner. She still didn't give all the, you'll hear in this recording, she still wanted to keep it sort of secret. She didn't give the exact, proportions of the ingredients.
Yeah. When your mother did so much cooking, did she get the recipes from other family members? Did she enjoy kind of coming up with her own way of making things? A little bit of both, maybe?
Yeah, some were family recipes that she got from her mother, my grandmother. Some she got recipes out of magazines, out of the newspaper, like anybody else, from TV. She had hundreds of cookbooks, and after she passed away, we're cleaning out her place. I'm going through the cookbooks because I'm thinking I'm taking those. Those are mine now. I'm going through these cookbooks, and she made notes on the pages of the recipes, or as I like to say, not only did she correct her four sons, she also did these cookbook authors, telling them the mistakes that they made, how to make things better. But she was a big trial and error person. She loved to experiment, with different things. So that's where her recipes all came from.
Yeah, my mom had a bunch of cookbooks, and Dad kept them all. So when Dad passed away, when my cousin Dee and I were cleaning out the kitchen and his place, we found these cookbooks, some of which I hadn't seen in decades, They got them from a number of different sources.
Where are they now? What happened to them?
I have some of them myself. Others were donated, yes.
Yeah.
So I saved a few for sentimental value because, my mother's handwriting was in them, and that kind of thing.
I did exactly the same thing. I got rid of a lot of them, but in these books where she and corrected some of these recipes. And there's tomato sauce is spilled on the pages.
Oh, that makes it authentic.
It's
burned edges.
Priceless.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It makes it authentic.
Right.
Sure, to have some sort of stain on them.
Yeah. And to think you and I almost became stepbrothers.
Oh, that's right.
At the Tree Time broadcast,
yes,
where I brought my mom. We did this several years. I brought my mom all the way out there. You brought your dad. And, we're up doing the show, and I look over, and your dad is hitting on my mom.
They were having a very friendly conversation.
Yeah. It's like, hey, good looking, I'll be back to pick you up later. I recognize that anywhere. Are you kidding me? Chicago's very own Lou Rawls with that signature classic WGN promo song that ran, I guess that was back, what, in the 70s, I think?
Yeah, I remember
70s and
yeah.
the 80s. That's Lou Rawls, isn't it?
That is Chicago's own Lou Rawls.
1983. 83, sure.
Exactly. Chicago's very own, because yesterday was the anniversary of when WGN-TV officially signed on the air 77 years ago. Isn't that amazing?
It's crazy to think.
April 5th, 1948, with a 2-hour-long special featuring then Chicago Mayor Martin Kennelly, Robert R. McCormick, founder of the Tribune and WGN Radio and WGN TV, U.S. Senator Charles Brooks. Do you remember him at all?
No, no, that name I don't remember. I don't remember him. Paul H. Douglas, yes, but not.
I remember Paul Douglas.
Yeah.
Didn't he have shoeboxes filled with money?
No, that was Paul Powell. Paul Powell. He was Secretary of State and lived in Southern Illinois. Paul Powell. They found several hundred thousand dollars in his room.
What do you know, a corrupt Illinois politician?
After he passed away. And they never, to my knowledge, they never really determined where the money came from.
From where the money
right.
came. Right. Yeah. we're so proud here in Illinois.
I was in a discussion of this nature with some good friends at lunch at a Chicago institution yesterday at Manny's. We were talking about Illinois politics. Mm. How fascinating it is. I'll just put it that way.
It's like most of our governors have been in the slammer. So I don't know if most of them, but too many of them have been. Also on that first broadcast, Governor Dwight Green.
That name does not ring a bell at all. No, no.
Wonder what he was in the slammer for.
I don't think he was. The earliest governor I remember was Otto Kerner that went to prison. Mm. Remember him?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Otto Kerner. Then Dan Walker.
Who was governor before Kerner? Was it? No, I don't remember.
It wasn't Richard Oglefie.
Was it?
No, I don't think it was. After. He was after. Yeah.
He was after.
I couldn't tell you.
We've had quite a history here in the good old state of Illinois. We talked about musician Dick Two-Ton Baker, who was a musician, television personality. He was on that first show. Comedian George Gobel, Lonesome George Gobel, who a lot of people know from the Hollywood Squares. And band leader Robert Trendler, Bob Trendler from the Big Top Band.
The best band in the land.
Yes. People remember best from the Bozo Show, but yeah, he was the head cat, the WGN Orchestra, as it was called. So there you go. Happy anniversary, WGN.
77, you said?
77 years ago today.
77.
We signed on. Fortunately, you know, we're meticulous archivers here at WGN, keeping all the old broadcasts. We have an actual piece of that very first.
Oh. Oh, man. Talk about running a joke into the ground.
No.
But this one's funny.
No, no. This one. Yeah. For a change, we have something funny on the show. This is not what you think. We played something earlier from Aloysius Schwani, Schwani's great-grandfather. This one is from Horatio Richards, my grandfather, who was also part of that original broadcast. Take a listen.
That old car might be worth money. Call Victory Auto Wreckers at 860-2000 for a quote.
You're not the only one who was on.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You
broadcast.
Said that old car might
7 days a week, and you might get cash on the spot or save money by fixing up your car with used parts. Victory has 10 acres of used parts. Starters, transmissions, batteries for all types of cars.
perfect.
All right, now how come that wasn't bleeped out?
Because I didn't swear like you did. Because I don't have a potty mouth like some people on this show do. That would be the reason why.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. What memories.
Right?
What memories.
When they were doing that first broadcast, can you ever, do you think they ever could have imagined that there would be a show like this? I'm saying.
Oh, no.
Flipping over in their graves as we speak right now. All right, it's 1221, 720 WTF. Welcome to the portion of the show where I make myself cry, and maybe you too, with a recording of my late mother, who used to join us all the time here on the show with recipes and stories and such. She passed away in 2020. Alzheimer's, dementia. She actually had COVID, but beat it. That's that, you know, these tough depression kids. She actually beat the COVID, but could not beat the Alzheimer's and the dementia. And we lost her going on 5 years this year. I constantly have people asking, why don't you play some old interviews of your mom and the recipes and the stories and all that. And for, you know, 5 years now, I have not played any of the recordings because I just didn't think that I was ready to hear her voice again, to tell you the truth. And at home, I was, you know, going through junk at home, and I found a cassette recording of one of her appearances on the show. And I said, well, you know, one of these days I got to listen to these tapes again. And I put it in and was very emotional hearing her voice. It did make me tear up. It made me laugh because she was funny. She gave us a recipe, which is going to be very timely because it's her recipe for her deviled eggs that she made. And I know everybody says, well, my mom was the best cook. My mom was a pretty great cook. And literally any place that she took these deviled egg recipes, wherever, whatever the function, and she, everybody asked her to make her deviled eggs. When she'd bring them, people would go crazy. This is a spectacular recipe that she has for the deviled eggs. So I decided that I'm going to make her deviled eggs on my TV cooking segment this coming Wednesday, you know, just ahead of Easter. So it's timely. And I'm going to play the recording of my mom. First time that I've done this since she's passed away. You'll hear, and, you know, you'll, if you've heard her before, you'll, you know, maybe you'll get emotional. I don't know, but you'll definitely laugh because she is pretty kind of funny the way she describes it all, but also very interestingly, like a lot of protective cooks, she doesn't really give you the proportions of the things that she's talking about because she didn't measure things. She didn't write things down, but I did that. I recreated it and I did write everything down. So let's listen to the recording and I'll tell you how you can get a copy of her recipe, after we listen to my mom. My mom and the most popular person ever who's been on our show.
Here we go again.
On the line with us here. Mom, good morning. Happy Easter to you.
Hi, Dean. Happy Easter to you also.
American Easter, we should qualify, right?
Yeah, right, right.
next Sunday will be our Easter, but right. You know, almost everybody celebrating Easter today or Passover, big holiday. Yeah. You know, everybody's eating the hard-boiled eggs.
Yes.
Whether it's Easter, Passover, you know, whatever the celebration is.
Goodness, sure, of course.
Yeah, and I was saying that you make the greatest deviled eggs of all time. Is there any place where people don't rave about your deviled eggs?
No, everybody, I hate to say this, but everybody loves them. They all want to know what the recipe is. Exactly. What do I put in there?
Exactly.
And when they hear what I put in, they're surprised because they didn't think that many things go in deviled eggs. But I guess that's what makes the flavor so nice.
Right, right. So, you know, my mom is one of these cooks where she doesn't measure anything. It's all by sight and by feel and by taste right, with you, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So tell us, what goes in your special deviled egg?
Well, once you separate the yolks from the whites, you mash up the yolks in a bowl. You don't have to put it in the blender. I put in salt and pepper, very little salt, a relish, green relish, but the relish, I squeeze out most of the juice from it so it's dry.
Okay.
Then I sprinkle in lemon, pepper, a few tablespoons of mayo, mayonnaise, mustard,
right,
horseradish, just a little bit of horseradish.
But
it gives it that kick. I think that's the secret recipe.
That's the secret. That's the secret ingredient. Yeah. I never knew there was horseradish in your deviled eggs.
Very just a little, and then I chop a little celery, very fine, and a little onion, fine, and I squeeze as much juice or liquid out of them that I can.
Right.
And that's it. I mix it all together, and then I put it in a piping bag. If you don't have a piping bag, you can use a plastic bag. Cut a tiny hole in it, and I pipe all the hollow whites, and it's so easy.
Right. Well, you're a baker, you know, that the piping bag, you do it so it's flowery and beautiful, right? I mean, that's...
Yes, yeah, I like to make it pretty because after I pipe in the yolks, then I cut olives that have a pimento.
Oh, yeah.
In slices, and I put two slices on each egg, and whenever I open the package up, wherever I'm taking it, they say, "Oh, are they beautiful?"
They are beautiful. They are. Yeah. Do you put paprika, or did you maybe years ago?
Oh, yes, you're absolutely right. I almost forgot that. Very lightly, very lightly. I tap the paprika jar. I don't want to get it too red on top.
Right.
Very light.
But just for a little color.
Right, right, yeah.
For a little color. Okay. Well, there you go. So, and you know, everyone can figure out. You know, do it to taste, you know, how much relish you put in or whatever.
You start out putting a little bit of everything and then taste it.
Yeah, there you go.
You'll see it may need a little salt or it may need a little this or that.
Right.
But be sure and squeeze the celery, the onions, and the relish, the juice out of it. Otherwise, it'll make your yolks
too runny.
Watery, yeah.
Too runny, yeah. Okay, well, there you go. My mom's official... deviled egg recipe. I'm telling you, people go crazy when she brings these deviled eggs to any occasion. You know, it's the first thing that's gone. You know, she brings it as an appetizer usually. And, you know, the deviled eggs are gone in a second because everybody loves them and they're famous. So happy to share that a little bit. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling fine, yeah.
My mom is 92 years old now. She doesn't mind if I tell her age. In fact, she's pretty proud of it, actually.
Yes, I am.
And we'd mentioned here on the show earlier this year when you were in the hospital with pneumonia.
Yeah.
And then in the rehab center, and she was in the hospital for almost 2 months.
Yeah.
But she's pretty tough.
I'm fine.
She's pretty tough. Everybody, you know this because when you go places, people tell you that they hear you on the radio. You know, people talk about it all the time. But we had so many calls and emails and people praying for you and sending texts and sending their best regards to you. So I know that they're doing that for you today again. To hear your voice doing so well.
Thank everybody. My voice is a little hoarse, but that doesn't mean I don't have a cold or anything.
It's because she smokes cigars.
No.
I'm not kidding. No, she doesn't. She doesn't. All right. Well, so we're going to have a little dinner later, I think.
We are.
I'll see you a little bit later on then, okay?
All right.
All right. Thanks.
Happy Easter to all your listeners.
All right. Love you. Bye-bye. Love you. I'll talk to you later on. There's my mom. She loves to visit. There's my mom 10 years ago. sharing her deviled egg recipe, which I will be recreating on my TV cooking segment this coming Wednesday on WGN-TV. I wish she had lived long enough to have seen me doing a cooking segment. She would have been bursting with pride. Her passion of cooking, me passing it along on TV. But we're going to pass along her recipe. Now, you notice in her recipe, she didn't give any proportions for anything. But I've been doing some experimenting with it, and I figured out the proportions. And we're going to post not only the recording of my mom that you just heard, but we'll also post the full recipe. So if you want the recipe, Jack will put it up a little bit later on, WGNRadio.com. Where do you go? To the Dean Richards section? Is that how that works? That would be me, Dean Richards. We'll post my mom's deviled egg recipe there. Okay? All right. And we'll check some news next. And now it's 12:38. This is Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. The award-winning All Things Edible program heard every Sunday, more or less, at this time when we are not preemptive. And we are not this week. So here we go. And we're getting ready for all the religious holidays coming up. I think I shared this recipe last Sunday for the coconut macaroons, which is a Passover favorite. Applicable for Passover because I use potato flour in it. You have to use a non-leavening flour in it if you're going to use it, you know, for Passover celebrations. And these coconut macaroons are so delicious. It's so easy to make these. I've got the rest. I keep all the recipes and all the cooking videos posted at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. So you can see past segments that I've done. You can see all the recipes. I've had a lot of extremely high number of positive feedback on the recipe that I did a couple of weeks ago for orzo, which is the very short pasta that looks like rice. It almost looks like a risotto. It's orzo. It's fresh asparagus, which is in season right now, and some feta cheese. It's really pretty much all that was in that. But, oh, man, is it delicious. And people have been trying the recipe, and I've been getting nothing but rave reviews, I got to say, on that particular recipe. So I'm glad to hear that. I've been getting rave reviews on the coconut macaroon recipe that we did this past Wednesday. And, you know, it's get yourself some coconut, get yourself some potato flour if you want to make it appropriate for Passover. What else is in it? Some egg whites. There's not a lot of ingredients in it. And then you form them on the roasting pan, the baking sheet, and roast them for about 25 minutes, 30 minutes. And they get golden brown, and oh, they're so good. You can just eat them right like that. But I also melted some chocolate and dipped them in the melted chocolate. So you had the coconut and the chocolate, and oh, brother, were they good. This is a quote from Mr. Larry Potash of the WGN Morning News. He tried a couple and said, "These are the best macaroons I've ever eaten in my life." Quote from Larry Potash. So there. But this week, going back to one of my mom's favorite recipes, you just heard her, the recording that we played from 10 years ago where she came on the show and shared her recipe for the deviled eggs. And she did not give the proportions for things. That's not how she cooked. She did it by sight and by taste. Like, you know, like a lot of the old school cooks, they just don't write things down. I tried to get her to write down recipes, just she didn't. And we did some videos together, you know, with the on the iPhone. We did one segment on television where we made the Greek lasagna, pastizo. So I've got a couple of recipes from, but mostly she just did things from 97 years of experience. And this deviled egg recipe that she had was by far one of the most popular things that she made. Anywhere that she went, people wanted her to bring the deviled eggs. And they were so absolutely delicious. And so, you know, I found this recording, I listened to it, and there was a surprise ingredient. I tried to recreate it on my own, and I always thought I got pretty close, but it was not exactly her, the way that she made it. And she did, she even said in this interview, this phone interview that we did with her, that there was the secret ingredient that everyone was surprised was in there, was horseradish. So I went and tried it with the horseradish, and it is right on. It is exactly my mother's recipe. I've figured it out. And I figured out the proportions, and I wrote it all down, and I'm making it available to anybody who wants it. We are going to we're going to post it when I cook them on, when I make this on TV this coming Wednesday. We always post the videos and the recipes, so we are going to do that, WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. But today, because we played my mom's interview, we're also going to post the actual recipe on our website here as well, WGNRadio.com. And if you go to the Dean section, you'll see there's the recording of today's show. We're going to post the interview and the actual recipe with proportions. You know, Jack will post it sometime shortly after the show today, so you'll be able to get it today. WGNRadio.com, and look for the Dean Richards section. You'll be able to find it. But here, let me just run it down real quick. And, of course, you start, it's based on a dozen eggs. You can use large or you can use extra large eggs, depending on whether or not you want to take out a second mortgage on your home. I know that eggs are expensive right now. Although somebody texted earlier and said that Jewel had them on sale for 99 cents, limit two. So, you know, there you go. 99 cents for a dozen eggs, dozen large eggs. That's not too bad. But anyway, start off with a dozen eggs. And by the way, I also put, with my mom's recipe, the surefire way to hard boil the eggs. It's with a steamer insert. There's sort of a technique of doing this so that the shells come off easily, so that you don't overcook them, so that, you know, the yolk doesn't turn that greenish color, so it, you know, it stays a nice kind of orange color the way an egg yolk is supposed to look. So if you want the surefire way to do hard-boiled eggs, I've also got the recipe for that. But back to the ingredients now. So you've got the hard-boiled eggs. You slice them in half lengthwise. You take the egg yolks out, put them in a separate bowl, and just keep the egg whites, shells, if you will. Just set those aside for a minute. While you also add into the egg yolks, 1/4 cup of mayonnaise, 1 tablespoon of Dijon mustard. I use Dijon mustard in mine. She used 1 tablespoon of the sweet pickle relish. And as you heard her say, squeeze most of the liquid out of it. You don't want your egg yolk mixture to be runny. So, you know, just give it a good squeeze and get most of the liquid out of there. Here's that secret ingredient that she said. 1 teaspoon of creamy horseradish sauce. Gives it just a tiny bit of a bite. It's not spicy at all. It just gives it a little character, if you will. You heard my mom say to put some finely chopped celery in there. 1/4 cup is plenty. She also said to take some finely chopped onion. I like to use the Vidalia onions, the sweet onions, finely chop those. About a quarter of a cup each is plenty in this whole mixture. All of that is going to get mixed together. That's your mixture now to put back into the egg whites, the hard egg whites. So you can take a piping bag and a fancy piping tip on, in the bag if you want, put it back into the egg white, nice and floury like my mom did. Or if you don't have that, and I'm not good at it, so what I do is I take a Ziploc, I put the mixture in a Ziploc bag, I snip off just a little bit of the one of the corners of the Ziploc bag, and I squeeze it as if it were a piping bag. And it's not as quite as pretty, but it certainly does the trick. So fill up all the egg whites, throw a little paprika on top of it. And then she talked about taking the sliced olives with the pimentos. They sell them already sliced. You can get a small bottle of those. And put a couple of slices on each of the deviled eggs. And you've got yourself an amazing treat. Salt and pepper, of course, goes into the mixture, you know, beforehand. All of it's in the written recipe that we've got. And we're going to post right after the show today, WGNradio.com, and look for the Dean Richards section. And as I said, I am going to be actually making these on my TV cooking segment this coming Wednesday as well, all right, on WGN television. 312-981-7200 is the telephone number. And let me see what we've got here on the old text line. Let me take a little break. Maybe you've got some ways that you do the deviled eggs that are different. Maybe you've got some suggestions. 312-981-7200 when we come right back. 1252. You stroll around the dance floor of life. Dean Richards, Sunday morning on our Food Time show. Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show, the award-winning All Things Edible program. Let's see what's going on the text line today. 773 area code. Dean, instead of the sliced green olives, try sprinkling bacon bits on the deviled eggs. Yeah, I've had that. That's pretty tasty. I'm just going by my mother's recipe, so, you know, don't make my mother mad at me by changing her recipe. I've had them with the bacon. You're right. It's really good. Instead of those dehydrated bacon bits that they sell in the jar, fry up a few pieces, chop it up. If you have, like, actual bacon that's freshly cooked, much more delicious. And by the way, not just green olives, but green olives with the pimentos. That's what makes it really pretty. Visually, it's something to see, but the taste profile is completely different than regular sliced green olives, which can be a little bit bitter. But thank you, Sharon from Chicago. Really appreciate your note and your kind words. Let me see here. 847 area code. Dean, my mom didn't like finding pieces of celery in her deviled eggs, but she did like the taste of celery. She would dry the leaves of the celery and then pulverize them and put a pinch or two in the egg mix. Yeah, I guess that would work. Yeah, that very definitely would work. Maybe because I grew up with these deviled eggs from my mom, I like the crunchiness of the celery, you know, inside there. 630 area code. I thought in the replay of your mom's instructions, she said to use lemon pepper, the seasoning, lemon pepper. Not the first time that I've disobeyed my mother's directions. I'm not a fan of lemon pepper because you can't control the amount of lemon and the pepper. It's all mixed together. I prefer putting lemon zest for the lemon, and which is what I put in the written down recipe. I put lemon zest and then pepper, and that way you can control how much lemon you're putting in and how much pepper you're putting in. So, you know, not the first time I've changed what my mom told me to do. Let me see here. 847 area code. Dean, don't make everyone run out to Jewel for the 99-cent eggs. That was a Saturday-only online order offer for $75 or more. Oh, okay. That's a big difference. I knew that somebody had texted in and said that Jewel had eggs on sale for 99 cents. But according to this texter, that was yesterday only. It was for online orders, $75 or more. All right. So, you know, look around. You'll be able to find, you know, eggs that are a reasonable price. They're still very expensive. The eggs are expensive. I see them for about $4 a dozen or so. So, you know, look around. Somebody on the text line said Trader Joe's has inexpensive eggs also. So, you know, there you go. Let me, what else do we have here? Here is somebody who was asking about something else for Easter. Dean, I always enjoyed Greek Easter bread. Do you have a recipe for that? Actually, I don't. The bread is called tsouraiki. Tsouraiki, T-S-O-U-R-E-K-I. It's a sweet bread, sometimes with almonds, sliced almonds on it. Sometimes they bake a red Easter egg right into it. I've never actually made it, but I do have a recipe for it, which I texted back to this person. And if you want, we can put this recipe. It's not my recipe. It's from mygreekdish.com. Somebody wants the tsouraiki, Greek bread, traditional Greek Easter bread recipe. There you go. It's there. What else do we have here? What time and channel is Dean Richards' cooking show on Wednesday? Well, it's part of the WGN TV morning news. It's WGN television, and it's every Wednesday morning right around 9:30 in the morning. Every Wednesday around 9:30 in the morning, it's on WGN TV. So, you know, there you go. 630 area code. Dean, instead of mayonnaise, I use ranch dressing in my deviled eggs. Huh. Okay, that sounds interesting. I'm going to have to give that a try and a little imagine. I would think the mayonnaise would be a little creamier. I'm not sure, but I like the taste of ranch dressing. I'm going to give that a try. Definitely give it a try. I also mentioned, by the way, that in this written recipe that I put together, I also put directions for a surefire way to make the hard-boiled eggs. People have trouble with the hard-boiled eggs. They crack. They overcook them. They turn green. There's a whole variety of reasons, but I have done some research on this. I've tried it over and over and over, and the method that I put in the written recipe is a surefire way to do the hard-boiled eggs. So you'll find that there as well, okay? And again, we're going to post that WGNradio.com. Go to the Dean Richards section. That'll be after the show today. And then when I actually prepare these deviled eggs on the TV morning news this coming Wednesday morning at 9:30, WGN television, I will post not only the video of me preparing it, but also the full written down recipe as well. That's going to be it for today. See you tomorrow morning.